This is Dolores Cannon again. And we're going to be getting up to Christmas here in just another couple of days. Okay, let me give out the telephone numbers first for those that might want to call in. If you want to call in and you're in the States, the number is 1-888-268-4313. 1-888-268-4313. And for those that are overseas in other countries, the international number, in case you might want to call in, is 1-281-419-7697. It's 1-281-419-7697. It was interesting that when I was in Dubai in the Middle East, they were asking about the show. I told them I had a weekly radio show in the States, and they were asking about it, and then I got to thinking, well, you know, maybe it wasn't available over there, and then it just dawned on me, of course, it goes over the Internet. It's available all over the world. I told them, you people will be able to get it, too, just by tuning into the blog and service. So it is an amazing feeling to think that it is reaching the entire world all at the same time. Of course, over there, they're in bed by this time. All right. 2 weeks ago, I was speaking about life after death, and I couldn't get all the information in because we didn't have enough time in an hour. And I was going to continue that. But tonight, I was thinking, because it's so close to Christmas, I think I'm going to speak instead about my two books relating to Jesus and the missing parts and the life of Jesus. These books are Jesus and the Essenes, and They Walk with Jesus. Now, they have been out since the 90s. They were published in the 90s, first came out in England, and they are now published all over the world. They're in many, many languages, and they're considered classics. And people just love them. Everywhere I go, all over the world, they want me to do lectures on these books. And they said they have become classics because they do deal with the missing parts of Jesus' life, the parts that are not in the Bible. Because I'm sure many of you out there realize that the Bible doesn't have all of the information, that it was changed. And there's a lot that has not come down to our time. And a lot of the stories that I came across in my work, I think, are very beautiful. And there's stories of miracles. There's stories of things that were not in the Bible that I think should be there because they show Jesus the way he really was as a human being. That part is not really focused on with the church. But as you know, my work comes through my hypnosis work with the hypnosis therapy and past life regressions. So the information on Jesus and the Essenes first came through was about 20 years ago. And it was a young girl, only in her 20s, that just wanted to see if she'd had past lives. And when we started doing the regressions, found out she had a wealth of material because she was an excellent somnambulistic subject. This is where the person goes into the deepest possible level, which is the level that I like to work at. And in the somnambulistic level, the person becomes the other personality totally. This life fades away, and if you were to mention something from this life, an object, or a phrase, or anything that we use now, if it was not available or not known in that time period that they are reliving, they won't even know what you're talking about. And this has been quite amusing to watch in many people when I get them into these time periods, and they won't even know some of the most common things that we're familiar with. This is because the other person, they become the other personality totally, and this life no longer exists for them at all. It just fades away. That's why I call my work time travel, like going through time tunnels. Because when the person is that deep and they go into the past and they are in those time periods and become the other personality, it is definitely like time travel. And because I'm the reporter and I love to ask questions and get information, it's wonderful to have them in those time periods in that kind of state, because you can get all of the information that the person at that time was have had available to them. And that's why I've been able to get information that is not known. That's why I call myself the reporter, the researcher of lost knowledge, because a lot of the information I've written about in my books is information that is not known by the general public, or it has been forgotten and lost. To me, that's the greatest thing, is to get back this type of information and present it to the world. But when the person is in that deep somnambulistic state, they don't remember anything when they awaken. They think they have just fallen asleep. A lot of times they'll tell me that. They say, oh, I dozed off. You didn't get anything. And here I have 2 hours on tape. But that's because this life just clicks off, and they are just like they are asleep as they are reliving the other life. And they have no memory when they awaken. And this young girl that I began to get the Jesus material from was back in the 80s. During the 80s is when I got a lot of very valuable material that I have written about in many of my books. That's when the Nostradamus material came through, and I wrote 3 books on that. And all of these things I'll be talking about in the weeks and months ahead, all the information in my books. But also in the 80s is when I began my UFO research, and I became involved with that, with hundreds of cases dealing with UFOs and ETs. So at that same time is when the material with the Jesus books first began to come through. But this young girl just came to me because she was just interested in exploring and seeing if she'd had a past life. And we started out, I ended up taking her through over 30 different past lives, and we just kept going and going backward in time. And the wealth of information that she supplied, because she was able to become these personalities, she was able to tell us all about the cultures that she was living in, all of the background, the civilization, and the theology, everything about these time periods. So there's a great deal of information that I've uncovered through this one person alone. I've written 2 books on her so far, and I have enough material that I could write more, but my work keeps taking me in many different directions. But as she went back into this lifetime, we were taking her back in different jumps, just going backwards to time, when she came to the lifetime where she was one of the Essenes at the time of Jesus. Now, a lot of people don't know who the Essenes were. If you're familiar with the Dead Sea Scrolls, they were discovered at the end of the 1940s and the beginning of the 1950s. They made this discovery at Qumran, which is outside of Israel, was in Israel. It's outside of Jerusalem, up in the hills, off of the Dead Sea. It's a place called Qumran. And they were never excavated this place. There were ruins there. But they always assumed it was a Roman garrison, and it's so hot out there that a lot of the archaeologists never really explored this place. So it was more or less left alone until the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls in the caves that were right around the ruins and above the Dead Sea. And most of you probably know the story of the shepherd boy who was following his goat, looking for the goat, and whenever the goat got into one of the caves, and he was the one who found the scrolls that were hidden in these huge pottery jars. Eventually, over time then, as the people found out about them, the scientists began accumulating all of these records. And they were calling it the greatest discovery in the history of man, because it was all the history especially of the Bible, going all the way back. They said it had the original versions of all of the books of the Bible, except I think one or two, the only ones that were not in there. Plus, also in the Dead Sea Scrolls is a lot of the history of the times and the stories of the Essenes, who were the community there at Qumran. And they were the ones who wrote and copied a lot of these scrolls. But at that time, it was supposed to be the greatest discovery in the history of man. And then what happened? After a few years, all of a sudden, it disappeared again, almost as though it was all pushed back into the caves, because if I found out, the theologians didn't want this information to get out to people. Because it was one of the things, it was showing that there was a Christianity before Christ. It didn't all begin with him. A lot of it did start with the Essene community. The Essene community at Qumran was a secret school, a mystery school, where all types of mysteries and knowledge were taught to just a select few of people that were selected for students. It was a very secret place. And even during those days in Israel, even the King Herod were afraid of these people because they had all of these secrets, and they didn't know what other knowledge they had. But I found that a lot of their knowledge came from Atlantis, because many of these were survivors and descendants of the people from Atlantis. They had a great deal of information and knowledge that they kept, and they maintained it, and they wrote about it, and did the copying of the scrolls. And this is why they buried them in the caves. This was at the time about 69 AD, whenever the Romans came in, and they were destroying the whole area, and they destroyed Jerusalem at that time. So they buried the scrolls to try to save them. But it ended up at the end, then, that Qumran and the Essenes were overrun, and a lot of them were murdered. But many of them died because they didn't want to reveal their information. They committed suicide because they didn't want the Romans to have access to their information, which was highly secret. Well, these were the Essenes and their connection with the Dead Sea Scrolls. But on the original board, the people who were investigating the Dead Sea Scrolls and doing the translation, there were many theologians, and they're the ones that decided to just bury all the information again, because they said, they wished it would go away and come back in another generation. They didn't know how to explain it to their followers, that where all this information was coming from. Because it was not the way the Bible said it was. But the information I found went along exactly with the information that I was getting for my work. I think I've said before, in the beginning, reincarnation was the basis of every religion in the world, including the early Christian church. Reincarnation was a very important basic concept, because it made so much sense. And it was only after the death of Christ, it was in like 500s, I believe it was, AD, when they had the councils to decide what was going to be in the Bible, and they accumulated all of the records, the stories, the books, everything that they could find, and decided to put the Bible together at that time. And they're the ones that decided to take everything out and not include it, that dealt with rebirth or the theory of reincarnation. And there were many, many stories that were omitted that belonged in there with the life of Jesus and the missing years. A lot of that was not included. After the writing of the Bible, when they're the ones that decided this is what we will say Jesus said, etc., etc. Many people think the Bible was written by the hands of God. It was not. It was written by the hands of men at the Fifth Council in the fifth century, when they had these meetings to decide all of this. After the Bible was finally put together, many more stories and records began to come forth. There are thousands and thousands of these that the people went through at that time to decide how to put in the Bible. Many more came through many years later, and they said, these need to be put into the Bible. But they said, no, sorry, it's already written now. There's nothing you can do about it. Now, I'm not making all this up, because these are official records that anyone can find if they go and do the research about the writing of the Bible and the history of the Bible. So the information I found and that the Essenes found and wrote about, and they were in the Dead Sea Scrolls, go back to the time before these were eliminated from the writing of the Bible. But this young girl that went back to the time when she was an Essene did not have much education. She was like in her 20s, and she had finished high school, and she went directly into the army just to learn an occupation. But she had never been out of this country. She didn't have a lot of higher education at all. So the information that came through her was astounding, because I don't think even an anthropologist would be able to come up with the type of things that she talked about and that I've included in the various books that I've written about her. When I had done all of my sessions and decided to write the book, Jesus of the Essene and the Essenes, I went to rabbis to ask questions, because there was a great deal of cultural information. There was a lot of theological information, especially dealing with the Torah, which was the first five books of the Bible, and I wanted to get information on this. Of course, I couldn't tell the rabbis why I wanted the information, but I began asking them questions. And the one looked at me and he said, where are you getting this information? He said, we haven't even spoken of these things in 2,000 years. So she had access to information that no one at this time knows. So that dispels the theory that they are taking it, making it up out of whole cloth, or they are taking it from my mind or her own mind, because this was lost information. And she even spoke in Aramaic when she was under two and was able to read Aramaic. So it dispels the theory that these are coming from somewhere else. This was lost information that has not been known in 2,000 years. But in the life that she went into, she was an Essene teacher. And she was a male teacher of the Torah. And this is the book of the law. I became very educated during this work, because I had no knowledge of Jewish, the book of the Torah or the law, any of that. I didn't have any knowledge of any of that. So a lot of the questions I asked when I was doing the book may seem naive to some people, but I didn't have any background. I said, whenever you're doing this kind of work, you never do the research while you're working on the project. After you get all of the information, then you do the research, because you can't be influenced by it that way. That's why I waited till I had it all ready and the book was already pretty much written before I went to do the research to flesh it out. But she was an Essene teacher, a master of the Torah, which is the first five books of the Bible dealing with Jewish law. And the amazing thing was, she was at Qumran as a teacher during the time that Jesus and John the Baptist were students there. So she was a teacher of the law to Jesus and John the Baptist. And this mystery school, as I said, many people came, but they were only certain people that were allowed to come, because they were being taught secret information. And they had different masters that taught different subjects. There were masters of mathematics, of astrology, of astronomy, of every type of field you could imagine. And she was the master of the Torah. So when Jesus and John the Baptist were students there, they had to learn everything that was being taught. And this all began when they were children. And they said it was amazing that Jesus had the ability to absorb information so quickly that he learned it much very fast. And so he was able to learn everything that was taught there. Many students came and just focused on one subject for as long as 5 years, but he was able to absorb everything and learn it all in just a fraction of the time it should have taken. I think one thing that's important for me to bring out, because we are so close to Christmas, is the story she gave us of the Star of Bethlehem. It was one of the most beautiful sessions I have ever had. I could feel the awe and the wonder as this girl, reliving the life of the man, witnessed what we call the Star of Bethlehem. And she went into it without being led there. I just told her to go forward to an important day. And she was standing on the hillside outside of Qumran on the cliffs, watching the sky. And all the others were out there too, the Essenes, because they said they knew this was the most important night. It was the night of the coming of the Messiah. They studied astrology to a great degree, and they had calculated the charts, and they knew about when the birth of Jesus was to occur. They had a good idea, and they were watching on the hills that night. And the man, we call him, his name was Sudi, that was the Essene teacher. Sudi said, according to the legends, his father had told him, that on the night when Jesus would be born, it would be the coming together of the four. And what he meant, there would be four stars coming together, and each one would be coming from a different part of the sky. Different four corners of the sky, and they would merge in that area. And she said as she watched them, the four stars came together, and they merged into one great light. First they formed a circle, and then they merged into one great, beautiful light. And from that light, she saw a beam of light shoot down toward the earth. And she said, in that light, he is born. And they were near Bethlehem, and they knew that was where he was going to be born. Now, we have found that the Bethlehem today is not the actual place that Jesus was born. No one really knows where the place was in those days. No one knows where the original Bethlehem was. The one they have today was chosen as to be the place of the birth, but it is not the real place. No one knows where the place was. But they said as the light shot down, that was when he was to be born, and it was to be near Bethlehem. So as they watched this, she said the energy was tremendous, just like the energy was coursing all around them, and the air was vibrant, and it was one of the most exciting things she had ever seen. And we were able to pick that up by the way her voice carried all of this emotion as watching this. She said, to think that I would be alive to see such a wonderful event as this, and she never thought it would be possible. But to me, that does not sound like normal stars. I think the people who wrote the Bible described it the best way they could, but it doesn't really sound like a normal star. She said the light remained in the sky and was visible during the day as well as night. And it could be seen everywhere. And there was a lot of talk at the time. They knew about novas and exploding stars. And they said it was not that. It was not a new star in the sky. They had no idea what it was, because after a month or so, it disappeared again. When I did the research, I found that some people think maybe it was a conjunction of stars, and I found there were two conjunctions in that part of the world during the time period that we think Jesus was born. But both of these conjunctions were only three stars that came together. A conjunction is when three normal planets and stars in the sky happen to be in the same position at one time. If people who do the astrology charts will know this, and it's called a conjunction. But then the stars move again in another day or so. But this could have been what some of them say was a conjunction. But the only conjunctions on record are three, not four. Besides, the light was so bright, he said whenever they came together, it was like the light of day. And you could see light all around them. It was a very powerful light. To me, that does not sound like normal four stars coming together. In the book, I leave it up to your own conclusions what you think it is. But it sounds very much like UFOs could have been involved, and that's very possible. Because in one of my other books, I found people living in those days describing the people who came out of the UFOs as angels and messengers who came to give them messages and news. In my book, Legacy from the Stars, I had one case where the people were outside in a desert community, and they saw a UFO skimming. He didn't call it that, but they saw this disc skimming across the desert floor, and it landed right where they were standing. And they said it came quite often. And when the beings would come out of the ship, they would be glowing white beings. And they came out on smaller disks, standing on smaller disks, so their feet would not touch the surface of the earth. They said they could not touch the surface of the earth. They skimmed across to them. And in that story, in Legacy from the Stars, they told the people of the Messiah was being born at that time. And it was quite a ways from where they were. So I've had many stories where UFOs and their people that are inside the UFOs are treated as messengers and angels when I take people back into those Bible times. So it's very possible, but I'll leave it up to your own speculation whether the Star of Bethlehem was actually four UFOs, lights coming together, or not. But to me, it certainly sounded like that could have been what it was. And when Jesus was a student at Qumran, they said there were spacecraft coming and going that had beings in them. They were very pleased with the Essenes because the way they were preserving the knowledge that had come down for so long ago. So this means that Jesus also saw these beings and had probably had interaction with them, but it was considered quite normal at that time. Now, some of these things may be a little hard for you to understand. I'm branching off into many parts of my work. But I did include them in the book, Jesus and the Essenes, because I wanted people to know that these things were accepted during that time. All right, and in the book, Jesus and the Essenes, after the Star of Bethlehem, I took her forward in time, and I began asking more questions about the star, and that's when she said that it remained in the sky for 2 months. And she talked about the Magi. And the Magi were astrologers. In the Bible, it calls them wise men, but they were astrologers. And they had also seen the same charts that they had seen at the Essenes to know that on this time, in a certain time period, is when the Messiah would be born. So they all knew from the charts about where it was going to be. And she said, each wise man or each magi followed one of the lights, one of the stars, and they were to meet where they all came together. And so they came from different parts of the country. And there were supposed to have been four. You know, ours come down to us, there were only three wise men. She said there was supposed to have been four, one of them that would follow each one of these stars. And, you know, this time of the year, we do hear the stories of the fourth wise man. There have been some stories on TV saying they think there might have been a fourth wise man. According to what Sudhi was telling me at the time of the Essenes, they knew there was supposed to have been a fourth one, and no one knew what happened to him because he didn't make it to the meeting point when the other three all gathered up there to decide what they were going to do from there. And the story of going to the palace looking for the new baby was true because they didn't know where else to go. All of that part is true, and the part about the killing of the babies. There are many parts that are true in the Bible, and then according to her, and then there were other stories that went off in different directions. But I think that's very fitting right now, as we're so close to Christmas, to tell what she said was the actual Star of Bethlehem, which still remains a mystery, even with her telling of it, and the four wise men that came looking for the baby. Now, when she was at the Qumran, she did see the baby whenever Mary and Joseph came to flee. They were fleeing when the killing of the babies by Herod. And John the Baptist and Mary, and there's another story about Elizabeth and John the Baptist and Zacharias. In the beginning, when I started getting this information, I thought I would be able to find all of the verification in the Bible. I thought all I had to do was check the Bible in my research of it, find all of my answers there. Well, that wasn't true. I didn't even find half of the answers there. I tried, but the things I found a whole lot more from my own work that filled in the gaps. There were just too many gaps in the whole story. There's another book that I found a lot more information that filled a lot of the gaps. This book is called The Aquarian Gospel, which is a very old book. The Aquarian Gospel filled in a lot of the parts that I thought were that should have been in the Bible. But when they were going to Egypt, they had to flee to get away from the soldiers that were looking for all the babies. Because of the census, they had an idea what children were born and pretty much where to find them. So Mary and Joseph took the baby and were fleeing. Well, where else are they going to go? Joseph and Mary were Essenes, and they were taught at Qumran. They went to the school there. So naturally, when it came time to flee, they came and stopped at Qumran on their way to Egypt. And it was at that time that Sudhi was able to see the baby for the first time. And he said it was not like any normal baby that he had ever seen. He said it didn't cry. It was very quiet. And he said he had the most beautiful eyes. He said, as though the eyes could see beyond the world. And he was so impressed by seeing this young baby Jesus. But he didn't know that after they went to Egypt and came back, that he was going to be the teacher of Jesus. So this happened whenever they brought the children back and John the Baptist joined them. They were just young boys at that time, and Sudhi was teaching both of them. And he said it was quite amazing because this is another thing people don't realize. Jesus was red-haired with blue eyes. And John the Baptist was fiery red hair with blue eyes. It's not exactly the picture that we have had of them all along. But people say, how could that be? They're all dark in that part of the world. Well, as I asked these questions, I found out that around Nazareth, where Jesus grew up, there were a lot of blonde people and a lot of red-haired people during that time period when they were living there. The dark skin color and the hair color didn't come in for many, many generations later when they had the intermarriage between those from the south of Africa, when they moved up that way and began to intermarry. Then the dark colors became predominant. But even today in that part of the world, there are many throwbacks that are blondes, and red hairs are not uncommon. And the people know where it comes from because it was so common so many years ago. So this is another amazing thing about their appearance. But Sudhi said that they were both red-haired, but that John the Baptist was fiery red hair, and it fit his personality because he was much more outgoing and demonstrative than his cousin, Jesus. And he said Jesus was quiet, and he'd look at you, he said, with these eyes, and you knew he knew so much. And he said in one of the sessions, Sudhi said, how can I teach someone who knows more than I do? He said, because he would bring up a principle of law that he was supposed to be teaching them. And he said Jesus could interpret it in a way that he had never heard of before, a way that was much more fair than what the laws had taught them. And he said, how do I teach someone who knows more than I do and is able to interpret it so exactly? And he learned so quickly. So he was there with Sudhi at Qumran until he was around 13. By that time, he had finished all of the studies and he had learned everything that the Essenes could teach them. And by learning everything, what only the masters could teach was how to cure illnesses, how to cure the sick, and how to raise the dead. They said, when you finally finished all that could be taught, the final thing would be learning how to raise the dead. So this is where he got a lot of his training. Now, a lot of people in the church don't want you to know that. They like you to think he just came from the hills one day with all of this knowledge and began to practice it and was never taught by anyone. But I found out the opposite was true. Now, there is a long period of missing years in the life of Jesus that are never explained in the Bible. They just call them the missing years. But I found out where he went and what he did during those missing years. His uncle was Joseph of Arimathea. Now, in the Bible, he's only mentioned just briefly as a rich man who gave the tomb to Jesus, to bury Jesus' body in after the crucifixion. That's the only mention they have of Joseph of Arimathea in the Bible. But he was a very, very important person in that time period. And he was Jesus' uncle. He was related to Mary on her side. This man, Joseph of Arimathea, was one of the richest people in the world, highly respected. He had huge fleets of ships, and he was very much into mostly tin. And there were tin mines in England, especially, that he would take the fleets of ships and go to England, accumulate the tin, and then trade it all over the world. And in those days, tin was such a valuable metal that it would be the equivalent of a Rockefeller today. He was dealing in huge numbers of money. He was extremely rich. So this man was very respected during that time period when Jesus was alive over there because of his wealth. The Romans respected him. No one would go against him because he was so rich. And he kept his sources of ten a secret, because if anyone found where he was going in England to get the sources of ten, they would have done the same thing. So it was all kept secret at that time, and he was trading ten all over the world. So what he did was take Jesus on some of these trips with him. And whenever Jesus was young, Mary would also go on these trips. And it would be just under the disguise of he's going on a trading mission to the different countries, and he took Jesus along just for the adventure, just for the trip. But that was not the real reason for taking him on these trips when he was going to the various countries. Because in each one of these countries that Joseph of Arimathea went to, he had Jesus learn from the wisest teachers. So Jesus was trained by the wisest teachers in the known world at that time. All of the people who had the accumulation of knowledge, huge amounts of knowledge, and he was able to absorb it so quickly. All of this knowledge he was able to learn. So it was not only the Essenes, he was going back and forth, learning from the Essenes, and then learning from the other teachers in India, China, all of the known world, and accumulating all of this vast knowledge. In one of the people, the groups that he learned from were the Druids in England. They were very close friends with Joseph of Arimathea. And they had, they said at that time, around Glastonbury, they had a university that was one of the largest and most educated universities in the world at that time. All types of information was taught there. Later, the Romans tried to make people think that the Druids were barbaric and did sacrifices. That was not true. They were highly educated, just like the Essenes were, with a tremendous amount of knowledge and information. People came from everywhere to learn from these people. And they had their headquarters outside of Glastonbury in England. And the university was very large and very powerful. And so Jesus learned from the Druids. This is one of the main people that taught him. I'm not going to have time tonight to go into the entire story, but as I went through the stories and then I did my research later, many, many books were to me, especially from England, of the legends and the stories that have come down of that part of the world when Jesus was visiting there. And I found that that is where the first church in the world was established, at Glastonbury. And this is some things people don't usually know. It was done within 10 years after the crucifixion of Jesus that Joseph of Arimathea and Mary Magdalene and several of the other disciples founded the first church there. The original building was built during the time when Jesus was traveling back and forth, and he helped to build the original building. And then after the crucifixion, they all returned there, and this became the first church at that time. They didn't call it a church. It was based on the teachings of Jesus. And the teachings of Jesus at that time were called the Way. And they were not supposed to ever have anyone over anyone. It was not supposed to be one supreme leader over anything. The meetings that Jesus held, which were supposed to be the way we were supposed to be doing it, are just similar to people meeting in each other's houses and sitting and listening and discussing. And different people at different times were allowed to talk and to show what they have learned. And this way, no one person would ever be in charge. It was always back and forth, people giving lectures, people giving demonstrations about meditation, about healing. And this was the way the church, if you want to call it that, was supposed to be. He didn't want it to be a structured system. He wanted it to be the sharing of information, knowledge, and he was teaching people how to cure, how to heal, how to meditate, and how to use their minds. This was what was supposed to have been passed along. He never wanted to be worshipped. That was not the idea. It was never intended. He just wanted to pass on to everyone what he had learned. But this was what happened at Glastonbury, was one of the places that Jesus learned from. But then when he would go back to Qumran, Sudhi would see him, and he would tell us the different progress that the young man was making. All of this is in the book Jesus and the Essenes. And after a certain length of time, after going back and forth and back and forth, one time he came back, he was almost 20, and Sudhi was talking to him. And he said Jesus was beginning to put together his philosophy. And he said, it's like no philosophy I've ever heard, because the rabbis and the Jewish at that time, were their philosophy was one of fear, and that God was a condemning God, and it was all based on fear. But he said Jesus was coming up with his own philosophy of love, that if there was love, there would be no evil in the world, there would be no violence, if everyone could understand his concept of love. That was the basis. And he said, I've never heard anyone speak like this. This was what he was basing it on. And he said, Jesus told him that everywhere he went in the world, from all the teachers he was studying with, all of the teachers seemed to be, I guess the word we would use now is holier than thou. They looked down on the students, the people they were trying to teach, using big words and big terminology that was difficult for the student to understand. So Jesus told Sudhi that now that I'm going to be teaching, he said, I will use a method that the people will understand. I will speak to the people directly in a way they can understand to get the information. Because in that time period, only the boys were educated. The girls didn't have to be. The only thing they were taught was just housekeeping and how to be a mother. They didn't need to know anything else than that. But the boys had to be taught mathematics and the Torah and how to read and write. And they figured that was all that they needed, which is the laws and the reading and writing and mathematics. They didn't have to learn anything else. If they wanted to learn anything else, then they had to go somewhere else to learn. This is where Qumran and the Essenes came in. They couldn't be taught anything anywhere else. So they... At that time, a lot of people couldn't read or write. It's another amazing point I want to bring up before I forget it, too, is that with the way women were treated in that time period, Jesus had more women followers than he had men, because women could understand the metaphysical, the intuitive things he was trying to teach. This is something the church has never wanted people to know. And he also had women disciples, because Mary Magdalene was one of his disciples. She was actually an Egyptian priestess. She had studied in Egypt and had great knowledge of healing, of metaphysical things. Jesus liked to be with her because he could speak to her one-on-one, and she could understand what he was talking about. And they would have long communications. Of course, the disciples didn't like this, and many of the disciples were jealous of her, especially Peter, and they didn't like it that Jesus spent so much time with her. But she could understand these concepts much more than the other ones could. So anyway, to backtrack, In that time period, most people couldn't read or write. So Jesus said, I will speak to them in a way they can understand. I will use nature. I will use things in nature that they can associate with. And this is when he came up with the concept of the parables, of relating teachings to nature so that the people would be able to understand the stories he was trying to tell. And that's what Sudhi said. This is something that has never been done before. But he said, I want them to understand. I don't want it to be over their head. And that's when he came up with the idea of the parables. And in the book, Jesus and the Essenes, there are many parables that are not in the Bible. And some of these parables do deal with reincarnation, with rebirth, that make perfect sense. So you can see that Jesus was taught this, and he did believe in it. And there's another wonderful scene in the book when he has started on his ministry, when he spoke at one of the synagogues. And Sadi, by this time, Jesus had been gone for quite a while, and his teacher didn't have very much contact with him. During the time they were teaching, he only had the two students, which is Jesus and John the Baptist. But this was when he had gone off and he was beginning to do his ministry, and stories were coming back about the miracles he was performing. Well, this one night, outside of Nazareth, Jesus was speaking in the synagogue, and that the old teacher went and was standing at the back of the synagogue to hear him speak. And he didn't let him know he was there. But he said, normally, anyone can speak in synagogue, but most of the time there's arguments going on and much discussion and loud voices. But he said when Jesus would get up to speak, his voice was so beautiful that everyone was quiet. They all were still so they could listen to him. And there was never a speaker like him. So this, I think, shows us the real Jesus. I also found that he was lonely because there were many people in his time that couldn't relate to what he was seeing. So he did feel like he was a person out of time, a person who didn't belong in that time period. In the book, They Walked with Jesus, we went even further, and we went with him on his ministry. I had two women at that time who went to lives where they were with him on his ministry, and they accompanied him as he went into the village of the lepers and was healing people. And he taught all of them how to heal. He said, everything I can do, you can do and more. He said, everyone has a healing center in the palm of their hand. And he drew an imaginary circle in the palm of his hand to show what he meant. And they said when he would heal people, they would see lights come out of his hands and heal the person. So this goes along with some of the metaphysical training many people are getting now, where they're laying on of hands and they feel energy come from their palms of their hands. It's just going along with what Jesus was teaching his followers at that time. And he did not heal everyone he came in contact with. That's another thing the churches don't make clear. Because he could look at the person and he could see if maybe it was their karma to have the disease or the illness or whatever it was they had wrong with them. If it was their karma, he couldn't do anything to take it away. He was bound by the laws of reincarnation and karma just like anyone else. And if he saw that it was their karma, he couldn't cure them. He could take away pain. He could help them in that way. But he was not allowed to take it away if it was their karma to have whatever the disease or illness was. And there are many beautiful stories in those two books about the healings he did and the teachings that he did. But now I'm coming to that time again where it's time to stop. And I've lectured on these things all over the world, and I know I can never touch all the information in an hour. So I'm probably going to come back again and again to talk about these various subjects in order to get more of the information out. But my books are full of information because I do so much research afterwards, and I put it together in a way people can understand. And they are becoming classics all over the world. The book Jesus and the Essenes is now being translated into Russian, and I'm going back to Russia in March when I do my whole month over in Europe. And this time we're going to be speaking on a lot of the new books that are being coming out in Russia. So anyway, it's amazing that these stories keep coming to me, and it's my job to present them to the world. So now it's time to close for tonight, and I want to wish everyone Merry Christmas. Even though you're going to download this later, it won't be Christmas. We are broadcasting tonight just before Christmas. If anyone wants to find out about any of my books, Blogins does have a link. Blogin Service has a link to our website, but our website is www.OzarkMountain.com. And that is abbreviated, OZARKMT.com. OZARKMT.com. Or if you're in Europe, it's OZARKMT.com. Or you can call our 800 number and find out more about the books. Also, you can find out about private sessions. I have an office here in Huntsville, Arkansas, where I do private sessions when I'm not on the road. Or you can find out about the hypnosis classes that I conduct all over the world. The 800 number is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. And you can contact me through the website or by that number, or email me with DECANNON@msn.com.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a BlogInService.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.